Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Welcome to Bad Axe Podcast. I'm your host, Danielle Blinka.
And I'm your co-host, Aaron.
Bad Axe is brought to you by the Podmoth Media Network. Check out Podmoth for more great podcasts. For extra episodes of Bad Axe, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/badaxepod. There's a link in our show notes and memberships start at just $1. You can also support Bad Axe for free by leaving us a positive review and by telling a friend about us. Now, on to today's case. Today, we are going to Great Bend, Kansas, in August of 2010. Great Bend is in central Kansas, located at the bend of the Arkansas River.
That's pretty cool.
That's where it gets its name. It's a small town with nearly 15,000 residents. It looks like a cute town with vintage vibes, though it is located in Tornado Alley, which is super scary.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense for Kansas, right? But still, it sucks, obviously.
Back in 2010, 14-year-old Alicia DeBolt was living in Great Bend with her mom, Tammy, and stepdad, Danny. She was super close to her family, especially her mom and her sister, Dawn, as well as her young nieces. Her family described her as a vibrant, caring girl with a big heart. She'd worked hard to become a competitive gymnast, and later on, she had become a cheerleader when she reached middle school.
Cool.
By August 2010, Alicia was finishing up her summer vacation before her freshman year at Great Bend High School. She was excited to officially be a high school cheerleader once the school year started, because that had been a goal of hers for a long time. Like a lot of teens, Alicia spent much of her time on her phone, texting with friends, and using the internet. She even purchased a new phone case recently, as of the end of August, as she was getting ready to go back to school, that was a pink zebra print.
Very nice.
Very cool.
Yeah.
She was also becoming a bit rebellious, though. As we know, it's normal for teens to act recklessly and push boundaries. It's part of normal human development. Most teens end up with some good stories to tell, but a few find themselves in danger. And unfortunately, that is something that was going to happen to Alicia. Part of her adventures included hanging out with older teens, especially older boys, and even some adults. She liked to feel older than her age. And I think that most young women slash girls know that when an older guy has interest in you, it just makes you feel cooler than all the other girls, even though really that guy is just being a predator.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's hard to recognize that this is a predator when you're that young. Instead, it just seems like, wow, I must be special. So she was really caught in that I must be special mentality as these older boys were flirting with her. One of the older guys that she'd been flirting with was someone she'd met through a friend. This guy's name was Ivan Ramirez, and he was from Mexico, and that was exciting to her. After meeting, Alicia and Ivan exchanged over 600 text messages.
Wow.
Well, when they're teenagers.
That's true. So that's probably like 2 days worth of text messages.
Yes. Many of these messages, though, were flirty. They complimented each other, and some of these messages suggest that there could have been a physical relationship at times. As summer was coming to a close, it looked like Ivan was moving away from the relationship, but Alicia was still crushing on him, so she wasn't entirely done with it. At the time, they were still hanging out as friends, and so they would go and attend parties together. This brings us to a party that Alicia wanted to go to on the night of August 21st, 2010, which was the last Saturday of summer vacation. That same day, Alicia had gone shopping in Wichita with her mom and sister and some other family members. They'd been out having a good time. That's when she bought that phone case. And they arrived home late. On the way home, Alicia was texting and someone let her know that there was a party happening that night. And since this was the last Saturday of summer, it was definitely something that interested her because she wanted to have a good time before she got back to school. She decided that if she got home early enough, she was going to go to this party. Her mom, Tammy, reminded Alicia that she had a midnight curfew and they didn't get home until after 10. So it didn't seem like it was possible for her to go. Alicia still wanted to make an appearance, though, so she told her mom that she had some guy friends, including Yvonne, that were going to come over and give her a ride to the party, and that they were also going to pick up her best friend. She texted the same information to that best friend, who was expecting Alicia to show up with a ride to pick her up a few minutes after Alicia left her own house, because they lived really close to each other.
Right, right.
At around 11 p.m., Alicia announced that her ride was there, and told her mom, bye, love you, see you at 12. It was the last time that they ever spoke to each other.
Aw. I mean, I kind of figured that was coming, but it's just always so sad.
It is sad. One day I'm going to surprise you guys and maybe tell a story from a peripheral person in the case. And then it will be like, oh no, about somebody else. Is that messed up? That's messed up. But I might still do it.
Hey, why not?
Yeah. When Alicia didn't come home, her mom, Tammy, started to panic. She knew something had to be wrong because this wasn't like Alicia. She had a phone on her, so she would always call her mom to let her know what was going on. And she also intended to be home by curfew. Like, they had talked about this. She didn't think that Alicia would just not show up. She tried to go down to the police department to file a missing persons report the next morning, but police did not take Alicia's disappearance seriously. They told her mom that she had to be missing for at least 24 hours before they could take a report, even though she was only 14.
Wow.
To them, though, she was a rebellious teen, even though that should not matter.
Yeah, it's always what they come back with, especially when it's like kids. And I'm sure it didn't help that like she was last seen going to a party or like that's the last time her mom saw her. So they're like, oh, she's probably just partying and got, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Which is not okay, but I mean, yeah.
I feel like it's never okay for them to not look for someone. I think we've learned from past incidences that that's not how things normally go.
Yeah. It's too late, you know, because like by the time they've taken the report, it's just, you know, it's probably whatever bad thing was going to happen has probably already happened.
Exactly.
So, I mean, like I get the idea that like if you immediately drop everything and go look, then maybe you get overwhelmed or too many cases, but the system doesn't work the way it is. You know, something's going to change.
I feel like they should at least release a missing persons announcement and do something.
Yeah. I mean, there's got to be some kind of compromise.
Yeah. Alicia's family knew that something was wrong. And so as the hours passed, her mother and sister did everything in their power to search for Alicia. Friends and family were chipping in and they were looking at her phone, right? They were looking at any kind of information that they could glean from what they found in her room, what she had said to them, what her friends knew, anything they could do to try to figure out what happened to Alicia. At one point during this family search, her sister Dawn actually identified an older guy who was a grown man in his 30s that had been talking to Alicia, and she confronted him. Because she knew from talking to her sister that this guy had been bothering her. And we're going to talk a little bit more about him in a minute. But essentially, this guy had been texting her and then his girlfriend was getting mad at Alicia, which is not an appropriate reaction since she's a child.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And so Alicia had confided in her sister that she had wanted them to leave her alone. And so the sister had confronted this guy and he was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I wasn't anywhere near her. So that was definitely, you know, they were doing a thorough search as a family to try to figure out what was going on here. On Monday morning, Alicia still had not come home. So Tammy contacted the police once again since 24 hours had finally passed. And they were able to file that missing persons report. It was a dark moment, though, because Alicia was scheduled to start her first day of high school that morning. And she had been looking forward to that first day when she would walk the halls as a high school cheerleader.
Yeah.
Instead, she was gone. Since Alicia had her phone on her that night, detectives were really quick to subpoena her cell phone records to look for clues as to what might have happened. It would take some time to get those transcripts, though. Meanwhile, they focused their sights on their first built-in suspect, who was Yvonne Ramirez. This was Alicia's guy friend that she had possibly had a relationship with. And they knew that he was supposed to be the one to pick her up that night because that's what Alicia had told her mom. They went to go talk to Yvonne, and he denied offering Alicia a ride at all. He said he never even made arrangements with her. He was not with her that night, and he actually had gone out with his friends. This was weird, though, because her best friend had confirmed that Alicia told her that Yvonne was giving them the ride. And it makes sense that she would lie to her mom, but why would she lie to her best friend when they were on the way to pick her up, too?
When
she disappeared.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
That night, Alicia had actually texted her friend once she'd gotten in the car that was picking her up and said, "We're on the way."
Huh.
So again, it wasn't like Alicia planned to like run away with somebody or run off. She literally told her friend, "We're coming to get you," and they never showed up.
Yeah, something is off about this.
Yeah, and it was like a 5 to 10 minute drive, so we're not talking about like an hour out of the way or anything.
Yeah.
Police pressured Yvonne about this, and he maintained that he and his friends had gone to an establishment called Willie J's. He gave the names of his friends so that they could talk to them, and also told them, just go talk to people that were there that night. I was there all night long. The police weren't sure what to make of this, because the fact that so many people had pointed a finger at Yvonne made them really suspicious. At the same time, there was a part of them that could see that there was people backing up his alibi. So they knew they had to keep looking for suspects while they tried to figure out if this alibi was legitimate. Since Alicia told her best friend that their ride was there, but they never came to pick up this bestie, they figured out that it must have been the person who picked her up that orchestrated this whole missing person situation.
I mean, that makes sense, right? If you find the driver, you should find at least a huge lead.
Mm-hmm. Alicia had said this was Ivan, but it wasn't possible that somebody else had picked her up that night. When police canvassed the neighborhood, they found witnesses who saw a black SUV pick her up.
Oh, boy. That's always suspicious. I mean, to be fair, it could be benign, but it could also be very malicious.
Mm-hmm. According to the witnesses, there was something weird about this. They said Alicia had come down, as the timestamps on the text messages would later show, at around 11:02 p.m. But when she got to the car, she stopped before getting inside. She was on the phone with her best friend talking at the time, but there seemed to be some sort of issue with the ride, wherein she didn't want to get in the car at first. But she talked to somebody who was inside the car, and then after a moment, she got inside.
Gotcha.
So based on what they saw, they got the impression that she had some hesitation, but that the driver had convinced her to go ahead and get inside.
Right.
The SUV then drove off into the dark night, taking Alicia with it. Investigators started thinking this seemed even more like they had an issue with this car. When they went to go talk to Alicia's family again, they found a man at the house talking to the family as well. This man was actually the older guy that the sister Dawn had confronted. He was 36-year-old Adam Longoria, and he had come to the house that day because he'd had a change of heart. After telling Dawn that he had nothing to do with this and that he barely even knew Alicia, he had decided that he was going to help them find her.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So he told this to the police because obviously the police see a random guy at the house and they're like, right. Red flags.
Exactly. Antennas are going up like, who are you? Why are you here? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yvonne also provided some other interesting information. One, he admitted that his phone had been used to text with Alicia. But it wasn't him doing it, just in case you were wondering.
So somebody else took his phone?
Well, one of his friends needed him to send her some texts. His friend, Yvonne.
Right.
Yes. Yvonne, who also is like an older teen that he's hanging out with as a 36-year-old grown-ass man.
Right.
Yvonne is the one who was wanting to text him. And also, just in case you were wondering, Yvonne is actually a really bad guy.
Oh, I'm sure.
Just so you know. Just so that the police knew about how bad Yvonne was. Just because he's really bad.
Yeah, I'm sure he had to, you know, you got to point the finger at somebody.
Yeah. With all these fingers pointing at Yvonne, police had to go talk to him again. They thought maybe he'll change his story a little bit and then we can use that as a whole to kind of hammer away at it. When they went to go talk to him, though, Yvonne maintained his alibi and said, no, I really was at Willie J's. Please go talk to people and confirm it, including my friend. I do have one admission, though. Because Yvonne had lied about something. He said that he was only out with one friend that night, but he had originally said he was out with two friends. He had said that his friend Rocco was there, but that was because Rocco had asked him to. Turns out Rocco had checked in with Yvonne and this other friend about what they were doing that night, and then said, hey, if the police ask you, just say I was with you.
Bloody FM presents Hometown Ghost Stories, a paranormal podcast that investigates a new town every week, bringing you all the hauntings, from haunted houses to castles, bridges to asylums, wandering spirits to demons. Over 100 episodes covering different towns all over the world. Tune in to Hometown Ghost Stories live on YouTube every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern or on any podcast platform and find out if your hometown is haunted.
Oh, well, that's not suspicious at all.
Yeah, so Rocco is actually a nickname. So police are like, we gotta track down this Rocco guy, all that jazz. While investigators were looking for Rocco, they continued to search for Alicia, who remained missing. But it wasn't the police who found her, unfortunately. 3 days after Alicia disappeared, on the afternoon of Tuesday, August 24th, workers at Venture Corporation found a charred human body at an asphalt plant near Great Bend. She was wearing unbuttoned shorts, a shirt, and a bra. All of her clothes tested positive for gasoline.
Oh, God, no.
Investigators suspected from the start that whoever had burned Alicia used an accelerant because of how badly the fire had burned her body. They could tell it wasn't a normal fire.
Yeah.
Although her entire body was charred, it appeared that the killer had poured extra accelerant on her genital and anal area because they had so much more damage.
Trying to destroy evidence, I'm sure.
You know. Yeah, in court docs, they said that this area was basically obliterated, and it appeared that the goal was that when they did swabs, they wouldn't be able to recover anything.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, God. What a douche.
Despite the charring on her body, investigators were able to recover the remains of duct tape that had been used at her ankles to tape her ankles together to prevent her from running away, and also from her nose and her mouth. Authorities suspected right away that the body belonged to Alicia since she was missing and they had a young girl's body. Obviously, it was burned, so it wasn't like they could just make a visual confirmation. They did find a necklace with the letter A on it, though, and this was a necklace that they knew Alicia had been wearing. So they were pretty sure it was her. So they went ahead and told her family because they knew that they were going to find out from the news regardless, and they didn't want that to happen.
Yeah.
At first, Alicia's mom didn't believe it, and she actually held out hope until the next day when they actually confirmed through forensic analysis that this was Alicia. Around that same time, Alicia's phone records finally arrived. Police scoured them for clues and immediately hit pay dirt because they found a text thread that showed Alicia making plans to attend that party that night. The person texting her said that they had beer and booze and would pick her up. Based on the phone records, investigators could see that the same contact picked Alicia up at around 11:02 that night because that's when the person said, I'm here, and she was confirmed that she was coming down. Unfortunately, Alicia didn't have the contacts saved in her phone, so they didn't know who the phone number belonged to. About 40 minutes after Alicia got into that black SUV, someone turned off her phone for the last time, but they did have the pings of her phone traveling towards that plant.
Yeah, because they probably just turned it off and they didn't actually like unplug the battery or something, right?
Investigators suspected that the person who turned off the phone was the killer and that they remembered to do it after they basically got to that site.
Makes sense, yeah.
The day after they recovered Alicia's remains, investigators confirmed for a fact who had been texting from that number. On August 25th, 2010, 4 days after the murder, they confirmed that this phone number belonged to 36-year-old Adam Longoria, who, as it turns out, went by the nickname Rocco.
Ah.
I don't know how they got to this nickname because his middle name is Joseph. And I don't know how Adam Joseph Longoria becomes Rocco, but that is what he goes by.
Yeah. It's a bit of a leap, but I mean, people go by what they want to go by, but I mean,
yeah. Yeah.
Barf.
I feel like maybe I wouldn't be such a hater if he wasn't such a disgusting piece of shit.
Yeah, I was going to say. Was like, it's just such a...
I'm going to be a hater. Investigators immediately brought Longoria in for questioning, but he once again pointed them back at Ivan. He maintained that Ivan was the one who wanted to send those text messages, which does not make sense, especially since we know that at the time all this was happening, Ivan was at Willie J's. Like, he had witnesses that could back that up.
Yeah.
Still, at this time, authorities didn't have enough to hold Longoria, so they had to release him. He actually then went on a work trip out of town. At the time of Alicia's disappearance, Longoria was dating a woman named Eva Brown. The pair had met on the internet while Longoria was serving a prison sentence.
Oh, good.
This was a 7-year sentence for aggravated robbery. He had a long criminal record, although none of it had anything, any kind of sex offenses or murder on it, but it did have some violence on his record. She had met him while he was still serving the sentence, and when he got out of prison in Texas, he moved to Great Bend, Kansas to be with her and live in her house.
Ah, so it's a love after lockup situation.
It is a love after lockup situation, and like a lot of the people on Love After Lockup, Eva had 2 kids, and they were only 11 and 13, so I have some questions.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people, including myself, find it a little upsetting that she had this guy who is being a predator because he's pursuing an actual teenager who he knows is a child, and she has a kid that's almost the same age.
Yeah.
That's fucked up.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
When police went and talked to Eva, she started to realize that her boyfriend might have had something to do with this. Because this had been several days of her seeing the aftermath of his behavior. And she admitted to authorities that she might have destroyed some evidence for him.
Uh-oh.
Here's her version of events. She said that on the day of the incident of the murder, she and Longoria had actually gone out. They had gone bowling that evening and then gone out to dinner. But the entire time they were out together, he was texting. And she suspected that he was texting Alicia because she had caught them texting before. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the texting in a minute. But basically, he was the one mostly texting Alicia. She would try to ignore his texts and sometimes just give him like one word answers because he would keep texting her the same thing over and over again. Or say things like, why aren't you responding? Is something wrong? Or what did I ever do to you? Like, things to get her to give any kind of response. And then he was trying to turn it back around to keep her talking.
Yeah. And he very was manipulative.
Very manipulative. And he was also, like, constantly flirting with her and calling her beautiful and hot stuff. And when can I take you out on a date? And offering her things and all kinds of nonsense. Yeah, just really predator behavior.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
And for the most part, she was either giving really short answers or not answering. But occasionally when she would need a ride, unfortunately, she would ask him for them. And she never actually took a ride from him before this incident. But she would, like, arrange one. So he knew that was, like, a need that she had. Because she's only 14, so she doesn't have a car.
Yeah.
So he knew that was, like, his in to try to get her to pay attention to him.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, when he first started texting her, he was actually using Eva's phone because he didn't have a phone at first because he had just gotten out of jail. And so Eva was able to easily catch him because obviously Alicia didn't know that this was happening. So she was trying to use the phone too. So occasionally she received a text message that was like a response to something that Longoria had sent to Alicia. And she confronted Alicia through text and was like, "Who is this?" And Longoria had said, "Oh, that's my cousin. Just ignore it."
Oh, yeah. Right.
And
come on.
Obviously, Alicia wasn't. She just was honest with Eva and was like, "No, like, it's me. I was at your party." And so she told Alicia that she couldn't be friends with Longoria because she had tried to say they were just friends. She's like, "Don't, you can't be friends with him anymore. He's my husband," even though they weren't married. And then essentially told Longoria not to text her. But her problem doesn't seem to be the age of the child. And that's one of the things that sticks out with me, because I feel like in a lot of ways, Eva did the right thing because she did honestly tell police what role she had in like destroying this evidence, because she didn't know at the time it was evidence. Although she should have reasonably thought it was, but we'll get to that. The problem that I have with her, though, is that when she found out that her boyfriend was texting a 14-year-old that she knew was 14 because she had met her at her own party.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So she knew, when she found out who Alicia was, she knew that Alicia was a teenager. That is a man problem. That's not a teenager problem.
Yeah.
That's a, you need to leave and I'm about to call the police problem because you're being a pervert.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Yeah. I don't understand the logic of fighting with a teenager. No. Over a man. That's absurd to me.
Oh, yeah, of course it is. I mean, especially when you have a teenager yourself, or mm-hmm. a preteen, I guess. I mean, yeah. Like, yeah, why would you not, like, immediately throw his ass out?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because, A, you now know that he's someone who's trying to prey on a teenager. And
yeah.
You know that you have a teenager in the house.
Exactly.
I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know. If it's me, I'm like, get the fuck out, right?
Exactly.
I'm like, I don't want to see you. I don't want to hear from you. I'm like,
No, there's no reason for this 36-year-old man to be texting this teenager.
No, absolutely not.
Anyway, so that night, after they had this dinner that was awkward because Longoria was texting someone who everyone determines eventually to be Alicia, they get back to the house around 10-something, and then he goes out around, like, close to 11, like a little before 11, he leaves and is gone for hours. He gets home in the wee hours of the morning. He's dirty. He smells like gasoline.
Oh, no.
Which we all know now is because he had just used gasoline to start a fire on a body.
Yeah.
But she does not know that. Now, she obviously asked him why he was all stinky, and he told her that he had spent the last few hours working on a friend's car. She believed this because, I mean, it sounds like it's a possibility. Like, no one's going to immediately think he was doing a murder.
That's true.
She doesn't know that anyone's even missing yet. At this point, she has no reason to suspect that he wasn't working on a car. And that would explain why he smelled like gas.
That's true.
He then puts his clothes in the washing machine and then, like, leaves again. That part was weird to her. This is when her, like, little spidey senses start going off. Because he was apparently... She doesn't say he was a lazy slob, but apparently he never tried to, like, do any chores or clean any of his stuff
or
up.
Or do any of his laundry, probably.
Yeah, so the fact that he was trying to do his own laundry was a bit suspicious.
Oh, yeah.
Meanwhile, later that morning, she gets the laundry out because she's trying to, like, move it over to the dryer and notices that his shirt has some really bad stains on it. She lets him know, like, "Your shirt has stains on it. Do you want me to just throw it out, or do you want me to try to, like, wash it again?" And by this point, he's getting a little weird about the shirt. And he tells her that he's going to throw it out.
Mm.
Meanwhile, she notices that he's also washing his shoes and bleaching his shoelaces.
Ah, because that's a normal thing that you do.
Mm-hmm. Lots of weird shit is happening. She also noticed that when she got in her car to take her kids somewhere, that the car smelled like gasoline.
Ah.
The mm-hmm. SUV that she drove.
Yeah, of course. Because that's also normal.
Yes. Yeah, so normal things that are happening. Meanwhile, let's get to this evidence disposal. So I told you that he had cleaned his shirt and all that stuff. Well, since the stain didn't come out, as time was passing and they had learned of the disappearance of Alicia, and people are starting to talk about this dark SUV that was seen at the scene, and wouldn't you know it, Eva drives a dark SUV that Longoria is always borrowing. Things start to slide into place, and all of a sudden, Longoria decides that he needs to get rid of that shirt he was wearing that night, that the stains wouldn't come out.
Of course he does.
So he shredded it and asked her to help him get rid of it, saying that if she loved him, she'd help him. She claims she was also kind of scared of him at this point, which may have been true. Eva admits that she threw the shreds of shirt out of her car window as she drove down the road to get rid of the shirt.
Right.
Not only do police have this story and the evidence they've already collected, but as they're getting in the cell phone pings, they see that Longoria's cell phone, that was his phone number's phone, pinged outside Alicia's home at the time of her abduction, then was immediately turned off and left off until just after midnight.
Of course.
Yeah. And that is around the time, fun fact, that Alicia's phone was being turned off and disposed of. It was actually just thrown around the area near the Venture Corporation asphalt plant where she was found. So her phone was like thrown nearby that. They were able to recover it and her new phone case, which is somehow really sad. Yeah. Like, it's all sad.
It is. Yeah.
All the evidence was coming together to make Longoria look very guilty. He soon became the prime suspect in Alicia's murder, but still they needed to do some searching. So investigators got a search warrant to search his home for evidence related to the crime, and they also took that SUV into evidence. As this all happened, Longoria was out of town for work, as I had told y'all before. And guess where he worked?
I have no idea. Like, maybe a teacher. Or
well, no, he's a felon. No. Where was the body discovered?
Oh, he works at that plant.
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
He works at the Venture Corporation asphalt plant where the body was dumped, which is like even more glaringly obvious of an evidence here.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So he's out of town for work. He finds out that they're searching his home and they took the car into evidence, and he had also called to ask his girlfriend if they'd found Alicia's body yet. And they actually had at the time that he called. This was like the day after. But it's unclear if the girlfriend knew, because initially they weren't trying to publicize it. So she would have only known if she had kind of heard through the grapevine. But based on the fact that they were searching his home, Longoria started to realize that things weren't looking so good for him. By the time he got back from this work job, he had decided to take his fate into his own hands and flee.
Yeah.
Obviously, he couldn't use his ex-girlfriend's car to escape because, well, technically she was still his girlfriend at the time, because the police had taken it.
Yeah.
So he had to get a car from somewhere else. He asked a neighbor to take him to his workplace, Fender Corporation, to get his final paycheck. After collecting the check, he climbed into a white SUV owned by the business. And had also taken a company cell phone, since he couldn't use his own cell phone because of crime.
Yeah.
Fortunately, someone quickly noticed that the SUV and phone were missing and remembered that they had actually seen Longoria looking in the windows of the cars at one point earlier that day.
Of course.
So they called the police. And this was awesome because it totally erased Longoria's head start of fleeing from police. Also, just as an FYI, if you are going to attempt to flee the police, don't use a company-owned vehicle and a company-owned phone. Do you want to know why?
Because they're easily tracked.
Yes, because they have GPS in them usually.
Yep.
So the police were able to ping him and drive over there and arrest him. And they got a good video of it. And later this would become a point of contention because the cops went like full cops on him.
Yeah.
Which is like one of the few times that it's funny that they like, you know, brought their guns out and were like, get down on the ground, like the whole shenanigans.
Yeah.
And so they, when they arrested him, they got a video of it and they wanted to play that in court, and the judge allowed it. And so the defense was like, that's prejudicial because it makes my client look all guilty.
Well, I mean, in this particular case, he's a fugitive who's accused of murdering a child.
And is fleeing in a stolen vehicle with a stolen phone.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. I have no sympathy for him. But two, I can see why a judge would allow that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I can understand why the cops would behave like that. Because, I mean,
yeah, he's probably a murderer.
You've got a fugitive in a stolen vehicle.
Yep.
Who's accused of murdering a child.
And he feels backed against the wall, like he doesn't have choices.
Yeah, he's probably desperate. Mm-hmm. For all you know, he's armed.
Yes.
I mean, you know he's dangerous. So, yeah, if I was the cops, I'd absolutely be going out, guns up, being like,
pew, pew.
Not taking any chances, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes total sense to me.
Also, I would like to point out, too, that the jury had to look at pictures of the crime scene. So they deserve a video of this turd bucket getting arrested in the street.
Yeah, for sure.
That's like, it's balanced.
Yeah, they saw some things that they'll never be able to forget, I'm sure.
Exactly.
Hello, hauntlings. My name is Alyssa.
And I'm Lindsay.
We're Macabre at Midnight, minus the RE.
Join us every week as we discuss and rate anything that fits on our scale of screams.
We like to talk about creepy things, and we want to share them with you. Sometimes it's paranormal.
Like ghosts or aliens or a cryptid or two.
Sometimes it's just a twisted turn in history. True crime, fact or fiction, the works.
Nope, don't like that.
So if you're a prideful weirdo like us, and you're interested in things that tend to be a little macabre,
this time with the RE,
then check us out wherever you listen to your podcasts, and we will see you in your nightmares.
Police arrested Longoria that same day when they pulled him over and charged him, and the prosecution charged him with theft and vehicle burglary. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun.
After building a case against him, the district attorney added new charges of capital murder and sodomy of a child. The crime is considered capital murder because he sexually assaulted Alicia during that murder.
Yeah.
If convicted of capital murder, Longoria would face either the death penalty or mandatory life in prison without parole. And then the sexual assault could add an additional 20 years if he was convicted of both of them separately. Because he had tried to escape before his arrest, the court actually approved a bond of $1.5 million because he was a flight risk.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely a flight risk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, literally, he...
He's already tried it once.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Longoria went on trial at the end of May of 2012. This was very close to 2 years after the murders. Prosecutor Kevin O'Connor presented the text thread that showed Longoria messaging and pursuing Alicia, as well as him arranging to pick her up on the night of the murder. The pair had actually been texting since July 17th. Though, as I said before, Alicia was not very receptive to these texts, and she hadn't saved Longoria in her phone at this time. Longoria met Alicia at a party weeks before the murder, and that party, ironically, was to celebrate the birthday of Longoria's girlfriend, Eva.
Oh, wow.
He had been throwing this party for her. He hosted it on July 17th, 2010, and it started at 1 p.m. Alicia wasn't actually invited to the party. She showed up later because the party just continued all day and was still happening sometime between 7 and 8 when she showed up with a group of other teenagers who just would come to the house to hang out. And it sounds like part of the reason why the teenagers wanted to come to the party was because alcohol was available to them. But I can't, like, confirm that, so that's alleged.
Yeah.
Late into the night, the party was still going on. It actually didn't end until around 3:30 or 4 in the morning. Alicia was sitting next to one of her friends in the wee hours of the morning, trying to still have a good time, when 36-year-old Longoria approached. Reminder, she was 14. 36-year-old Longoria asked 14-year-old Alicia if she had a boyfriend. She said yes, though she admitted that they had basically broken up. And it appears that this was the situation going on with Yvonne Ramirez, that she essentially still wanted to be boyfriend and girlfriend, and he really didn't. He was older and was trying to, like, move on with things, but also wasn't completely severing that relationship. So for Alicia, she kind of felt like she still might make things work with him. Plus, also, she doesn't want to date an old man. Like, I mean, I'm not saying 36 is old, but it is when you're 14.
Yeah, when you're 14, that's...
nasty. Like,
yeah, oh yeah.
That's a child.
Yeah.
Longoria took this whole we might be broken up thing as an invitation. Alicia's friend says that as things progressed, she could tell that Alicia wasn't interested, but that didn't seem to stop Longoria. Longoria asked Alicia out and said that if she agreed to go out with him, he would get her new clothes and a fake ID. And the fake ID is more evidence that he knew this was a child.
Oh, yeah, of course it is.
He wanted to take her out to eat. That was his first suggestion for a date. Alicia turned him down. Even though Alicia turned him down, Longoria still asked for a cell number and she gave it to him. This is speculation, but part of me thinks that she only gave him the phone number because she felt intimidated and she just wanted out of that situation, because a lot of us, people of the female persuasion, have given our numbers to people to get away from them.
Yeah.
Or as part of like a friend gathering numbers, like, I'm going to get everyone's number. And then you feel stupid not being the only person being like, no, I can't give you my number. So you just give them the number. And that seems to be what happened. Although I will admit that in the court documents, she did text him when she got home that night. So it's possible that she was okay with giving him the number. We don't know for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
We just know that her friend says that she wasn't interested in him as like some kind of relationship, you think. It's possible that more happened that night, though, because there is something that Longoria told people. Longoria told a friend that he had had sex with Alicia in his car after the party. However, no one is sure if that's true, because they don't ever reference a prior sexual act. And also, Alicia consistently turns him down. And at one point even directly says, we're just friends.
Yeah.
And tries to like ask his age and stuff like that. So I don't know if he's telling the truth. No one knows if he was telling the truth about having sex with her, or if this was just him trying to brag and have bravado.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like the latter, but I mean, you never know, I guess.
In the weeks after they met, the two sent many texts back and forth. She did initiate the first text by saying that, you know, it's Alicia, I made it or whatever, like saying she made it home most likely. But after that, he started sending her a lot of flirtatious and suggestive texts, and she never really flirted back. A lot of her text responses seemed to be kind of a gray rock situation, where either she wouldn't respond or she would give one-word answers, things like that. And if she didn't respond back, he would text her the same thing. So, like, he would say things like, what are you doing tonight, hottie? And then when she wouldn't respond, like, 7 to 15 minutes later, he would send another one that says, what are you doing tonight, hottie? And if he sent the same message a couple times and she didn't respond, he would be like, are you okay? Or are you mad at me? Or what did I ever do to you? And usually that would get her to say something like, nothing, or I'm fine, or something like that. And then he would use it as a window to keep trying to send her text messages.
Yeah.
And consistently, she would almost always text back like, okay, or good, or whatever. Whereas he's saying things like, you're so beautiful, or I can't believe a girl like you even wants to talk to me.
Yeah, I also can't believe that he's trying to talk to this child.
One of the longest texts that she sent was asking him how old he was. And he was like, does age even matter? And she was essentially like, yeah.
Yeah.
And he said he was 25.
Oh my God.
He's 36, remember.
Yeah. And she might believe that he's 25.
She did believe, because she told her sister that. Because around this same time, I told you that Eva found out about this and started harassing her as well. She told her sister that these two adults were messaging her. And that it was a 25-year-old guy, and that this girl, Eva, who she claimed she was his wife, but then Longoria was like, no, she's not. And even at one point said they broke up and that she was just, like, mad about it. Because, like, Eva was texting from a different phone. Was texting from his old phone, quote-unquote.
Right.
And so she had told her sister about it. And that's how the sister knew to confront Longoria in the first place. And she definitely believed he was 25 years old. And she wasn't trying to pursue any kind of relationship with him. And even literally texted, we're just friends, after he kept asking her out.
Yeah.
The main problem that led to the continued text from Alicia's phone, as I said before, was that she did occasionally ask him for a ride. And even though she never ended up taking a ride from him, this gave him the idea to offer her one. On the night of her disappearance, Longoria had offered to give Alicia a ride to a party. While she was out with her family shopping, he had texted her and let her know about this really cool party going on. It was the last Saturday of the summer. She wanted to go to this party. She didn't really feel comfortable riding with Longoria, though, because he was a creepy pervert and he had been propositioning her for over a month at that point. But he told her she didn't need to worry about that because her entire friend group was going.
So which is probably where Yvonne comes into play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she thought Yvonne and one of their mutual friends was going to be in the car, and they were going to pick up her best friend. So it wasn't just going to be her alone with Longoria. This she agreed to. And that's why she was saying that she was going to go out with these two guy friends, is because she didn't want to admit that this 25-year-old, quote-unquote, was giving them all a ride. She just told her mom that she was going out with her teenager friends, even though one of them is kind of an adult. But her older, you know, older young friends, if you makes that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. It does.
That they were going to go out to this party, and they were picking up her best friend on the way. So nobody had any reason to worry. Unfortunately, though, this was all a lie. It turns out that there was actually not even a party.
Oh, yeah.
The entire party had been made up as a ruse to get Alicia out of the house. When Alicia got down to the SUV, she almost didn't get in because, if you recall, the neighbor saw her pause. And the reason why is because she got down there expecting to see some of her friends in the car and then noticed that it was just this creepy guy. She asked him what was going on, and he told her that they were on the way to pick up the friends, and she was just basically the first one that was getting picked up.
Oh, God.
And she was on the phone with her bestie and was telling her best friend they were on their way. So part of her could have believed, like, we're 5 minutes down the road. We're going to go pick up my friend. It'll be okay. And she got in with him, and unfortunately, that was what he was hoping for.
Right.
At 11:33, Alicia's friends started to get worried because she had been picked up at around 11:02 and had said they were on their way, which should take about 5 minutes. They should have been there by 11:10. Now it's 11:33. No one's shown up. And Alicia's curfew was midnight. So the friend texted her, "Where are you at?" And Alicia did not respond. This text did help police, though, because the text pinged her phone. So they know she was headed towards Ventura Corporation, based on where her phone was traveling to.
Yeah.
Once he picked up Alicia, Longoria once again propositioned her. When she turned him down, he attacked. At some point, he used duct tape to tie her up. We know there was residue on her ankles, her mouth, and her nose. Also, he sexually assaulted her. And at least part of that assault happened in the car because police were able to recover some DNA evidence. On the floorboard of the front passenger seat, they found a large deposit of semen that matched Longoria's DNA, as well as body fluid DNA from Alicia. Ugh. And they aren't sure what the DNA came from. Like, a lot of the reports say saliva, but that actually wasn't confirmed. The defense had wanted to say it was saliva because they were trying to say that he instantly gave her a ride and then she sneezed on top of a place where he had masturbated. That's how they tried to explain the DNA evidence.
That's ridiculous.
Of course it's ridiculous. But also, there was a saliva test that was inconclusive, so it still could be saliva. All they know for sure, it was bodily fluids.
Yeah, but I mean, it puts her there. You mm-hmm. know, I mean, that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and like, they also explained that this was a large sample of the sperm DNA. So it wasn't like a tiny little, like, oopsie. It was definitely something had happened.
Yeah, for sure.
During the attack, Longoria also killed Alicia so that she couldn't tell people what happened to her. Once she was dead, he drove her out to his work site for some reason as a place to dispose of her body and dumped her. But he also wanted to burn the body to get rid of any evidence. So he drove to a gas station and went inside and asked about a gas can. Also, this was all caught on surveillance footage. So in case you were wondering, like, what if it wasn't him? No, he's on surveillance footage. And so he goes in, he asks the clerk, "Do y'all sell gas cans?" And the clerk's like, "No." He goes back out and then digs around in the trash until he finds a container from AutoZone. Some advertisement that they did not want.
Yeah, for sure.
And use that to buy part of a gallon of gas. Then he drove back to Ventura Corporation and used that gasoline to light Alicia on fire.
Wow.
Which is super fucked up.
Yes, it is.
Also, that day he had been at work at Ventura Corporation, but he had gotten off early because he had gotten Eva to call into his job to report a fake family emergency. And then they just went out and had fun together. And then this led to their bowling and dinner date.
Barf.
Yeah. So this guy is just like a whole sociopath or something.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess anyone who murders people is probably a sociopath.
Oh, yeah.
The prosecution was also able to show the phone evidence that showed Longoria's phone peeing at Alicia's house, turning off, and then turning back on at midnight, and also the phone, Alicia's phone, traveling out to the Ventura plant. They were able to show that surveillance footage that showed him buying the gas and putting it into the weird container, and also that gas container, the AutoZone container, was later recovered from a cemetery that's near the Ventura plant. Also, weird that he's disposing of evidence in the cemetery when he could have, I mean, I'm not saying you should dispose of bodies, but we talk about this a lot. Don't do any of that.
Yeah.
But it's weird to me that he put her body at his work site and then also talked to his co-workers, because they, some of them testified that he had been bringing up Alicia's disappearance unprompted.
Oh, yeah.
And talking about the case and talking about how he had met her at this party and that she had been texting his girlfriend and all kinds of nonsense, and just supplying his fake alibi that he made up to anyone who would listen.
Oh, of course he did.
Yeah. And, which was obviously weird at the time, but how are you going to bring her body to work, talk to everyone about it? And then there's also a cemetery right there that you could have just, I don't know. I don't know why, but somehow the cemetery seems more respectful, which is not, does not make sense.
Yeah. I mean, I get where you're going with it, but yeah, I mean, the whole situation is messed up.
Mm-hmm. It's just all bad.
Yeah.
The police were able to recover his shoes that he wore that night, and surprise, surprise, despite being washed, they had gasoline on them still. They also had that really incriminating DNA evidence. They had the witnesses from Ventura Corporation who testified that he'd been talking about Alicia's disappearance before she was found. But additionally, another witness came forward, and this one is like the weirdest part for me. There was a store clerk that testified that Longoria had come and bought some items at the store where they worked, and during the purchase, just randomly started talking about Alicia's disappearance and was essentially like, well, I didn't really know her, but I had texted her with my phone, and she was friends with my girlfriend, but I was out with my girlfriend that night, and then I was at Willie J's, like, for the entirety of the murder. Just unprompted to this random store clerk that he wasn't even friends with.
Right. That's very suspicious.
Yeah. So fucking weird. Obviously, he just wants to talk about it because he's happy that he did it, and it makes him feel happy to talk about it.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of like when you like someone, like when you're a teenager and you really like someone, and then you like keep talking about them and everyone knows you have a crush and you're like, how do you know? But also, let me tell you what Timmy did today, because right. You have a fucking crush on them. That's him, but like with his murder. Ugh.
Yeah.
Nasty. The defense questioned some of this evidence. I told you how they explained the DNA evidence. Also, there was a swab of DNA from her mouth that had unknown male DNA that they claimed showed there was another person, but they were able to show through lab analysis that it was kind of an inconsequential amount that could have been either lab error or also could have been something from earlier in the day, like if she shared a straw with someone. That's how minuscule this had been.
Right.
So that was possible to explain away. Also, the defense did admit that he had texted Alicia and were like, yeah, man, it's gross that he pursued a child, but he didn't kill her. They admitted that he stole the car from his employer, but not to flee because he was guilty. It was actually because he was being accused of murder and he was just like really scared.
Right.
Because he was innocent.
Yeah, that's what innocent people do.
Yes, like you do. They pointed out an alternative suspect. That was their plan to get him off. Was like, look, there's another guy. We have reasonable doubt.
They pointed at Yvonne.
Yes, Yvonne was their alternative suspect. And by the time all this happened, he was actually back in Mexico. And they were like, Yvonne did it. But he had an alibi.
Yep.
And also, no reason to kill Alicia.
Yeah, absolutely.
At all, period. Whereas Longoria, there's just so much evidence. Like, it's almost like all the evidence ever.
Yeah, it's a lot.
I know. It's the worst, from start to finish, the worst murder.
Yeah.
Of, like, in terms of planning and execution of a murder.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it's kind of embarrassing because he had actually been in prison and had probably met murderers. And then he got out and he did it. And he, like, did such a bad job.
Yeah.
Also, I'm glad he did because fuck that guy. He should be in jail for fucking ever and I hate him. But like, in terms of doing anything to try to cover it up, just bad from start to finish.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he might as well have just driven to the police station and been like, hey, it's me. after deliberating, the jury came back with a guilty verdict.
Yay.
Surprise. Yep. They convicted him of capital murder, theft, and vehicle burglary. Barton County Judge Hannelore Kitts. Yes, Hannelore Kitts, which is my favorite name right now.
That's a pretty cool name.
Amazing. Like, being genuine, not making fun of it.
No, no.
Hannelore Kitts sentenced him to a mandatory sentence of life in prison without the possibility of parole, with an extra 2 years combined for the theft and vehicle burglary, to be served consecutively, which I just think is fun because he'll be, like, dead. And then they're like, 2 more years for you, buddy. He appealed these convictions. The defense announced that as they went out, like, we're going to appeal.
Of course they did.
They had 8 counts for this appeal, which are kind of unique considering that we see a lot of these appeals. And normally they have the same shit over and over again. But here we have 8 things. Number one, he complained that he should have gotten a change of venue because everyone knew about the crime. Number two, the jury should have been instructed on the lesser charge of felony murder rather than capital murder. Which you did capital murder, so that's on you.
Yep.
Three, the jury should have been instructed on the lesser charge of reckless second-degree murder, which is fucking not what you did.
Yeah, that's not even close.
Four, the court should not have admitted a before-death photo of Alicia. Which, his problem with this is that she was a beautiful, young-looking teenage child. And the defense thought that was prejudicial because that makes it sadder that she was murdered.
Yeah, but it is, though.
Yeah, don't kill children, and then you won't have to be on trial for it.
It's very reasonable to show a picture of the victim. Exactly. I'm sorry. Like, that's not unreasonable.
Yeah, it's not like they had a whole sad slideshow.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the ridiculous. Court shouldn't have allowed a video of Longoria's arrest, which might be reasonable of a complaint, but also, I feel like the jury deserved it. The prosecutor committed misconduct in his closing statements. Mostly, he had some sarcastic comments that were kind of funny, even though it's probably not good for prosecutors to be sarcastic. But in making fun of the defense's dumbass claims that were, in fact, dumbass, he was like, maybe aliens did it. And they were like, that's misconduct.
You know, I can see why he would do that. Like, I mean, one, this guy sucks.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, I would get sarcastic. And two, this prosecutor's had to see some shit.
Yes.
In the prosecution and research of this case. So,
yes. I mean, he had to see a brutally murdered child. And then they find a big-ass semen stain with her DNA mixed into it, which is traumatic.
Oh, yeah.
And then the defense has the audacity to be like, well, hear us out. At a prior time, he had jacked off into the floorboard of his girlfriend's car that the whole family uses. And then at another time that was completely separate, this child had sneezed in the car. And then at a later time, somebody else abducted and murdered her. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. I'd have some sarcastic remarks for that, too. I mean, I'd probably have stronger remarks than that. So, to be honest with you, I mean, the sarcasm is probably restrained.
It's not like he rolled his eyes and gagged while he was saying that.
Yeah, which I probably would have done. I mean, I've said the word barf multiple times in this episode.
I know.
And I didn't even have to do any of that stuff that the prosecutor had to do.
Exactly. Anyway, the Supreme Court also was all like, you're allowed to be sarcastic. Just don't do it too much. Apparently, the court had already ruled on this, and the prosecutors are allowed to be sarcastic within reason. That is like a real thing. Okay, so that was one of them. The trial court should have declared a mistrial because of juror misconduct, which is one of the few things that actually would have made sense, kind of, but not really. So this is what happened. This juror, who is known as Juror M, had gone out to dinner, and the waitress that was waiting on him knows him in like real life, like they're friends. Yeah. And she had asked about if he was one of the jurors and blah, blah, blah. Well, according to some nosy bitch at the fucking restaurant, this nosy bitch claims that he discuss some evidence about blood splatter with this waitress, which I don't even think is pertinent in this case in the first place, because it doesn't, they never in the court documents even mention blood splatter. But that's what the snitch said. So then the snitch goes, and don't get me wrong, like if this was really happening and like someone was really doing misconduct, I get it. But like, it's a little weird that this person sees someone have like a short exchange. Because this lady is at work. It's not like this waitress is just like hanging out. Like, they see this short exchange and they go and tattle to the court. And they're like, hey, I saw them discussing the case. And also, he talked to a lawyer too about it. that got brought into it.
Monsters.
So the judge like brings in Juror M and is like, what the fuck? Like, what did this happen? And Juror M is like, not really. I confirmed I was on the jury, but I not talk about the case. And they actually ended up having to talk to both the waitress and the lawyer involved. Because the lawyer was like some friend that just ran into him at that restaurant and was like, hey, did you make it on the jury? And he was basically like, and that was at the end of it. And so the judge found that he hadn't been talking about the case and was basically like, don't do that again. And so that's why now the defense wanted to get like a use that as a reason for appeals. But part of the problem with that is that apparently they never even called for a mistrial. So you can't not grant it if it wasn't ever called for.
That's true.
So even if the Supreme Court had decided that could be juror misconduct, it wouldn't have mattered because they never called for a mistrial.
Right, yeah.
The final reason is they were like, the state failed to present sufficient evidence that he committed capital murder.
Bullshit.
Yeah. My favorite part was that at the very top, before they even explained their decision, they were like, the court didn't err. And also, there's a whole bunch of evidence. Like, there's definitely sufficient evidence. We're not even going to entertain that.
No, right. I mean, we've seen people get railroaded on, like, literally zero evidence. Yes. And not have it get overturned.
I know.
Like, this guy's got a whole, like, Mack truck full of evidence.
Yeah.
Give me a break, dude.
I can't even, like, there's both circumstantial and forensic evidence. Yeah. Like, if there's every type of evidence you can have.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that's not there is, like, having him on camera actively doing the murder. Because, like, yeah, they even have him on camera picking her up, basically, right?
Well, not picking her up.
Not his face, but, like, in the car and, like, her getting in.
Well, they had witnesses for that.
That's a witness.
They had
witnesses
for that. And they admitted they didn't see the person, but they did see the car.
Right, yeah.
But, like, the phone pinging, plus the DNA evidence, plus the gas station surveillance footage is what they have. Like, him buying the gas. Like, you're going to try to argue that you needed to buy gas in a discarded container from a trash can at the gas station.
Yeah.
Like, and he's driving his girlfriend's SUV. Like, there's just no scenario where, like, on the night of a murder where the victim is, like, picked up by a car that looks like yours, that your phone was texting, that your DNA is mingled with, that is burned, you also just coincidentally bought gas in a discarded plastic container you found in the trash. Like, that's fucking crazy.
Yeah, it's banana pants.
It's just not possible.
No, no way.
Like, there's just no way that he didn't murder her.
Yeah.
Anyway, his convictions were affirmed, I should say. It's what I was trying to get to. And he's in jail, thankfully, and fuck him. And we do not like him, and this is a very sad.
It's very sad.
You can watch most of this case on a Web of Lies episode, which I was watching just because I like Web of Lies, and I've rewatched some of these. They do like a slightly, they don't have all the evidence, and all the information is not included, but there is a Web of Lies episode about this. Let me see what season it is, because I have it in my sources here. It is season 5, episode 8, if you want to go watch it, and it's sad, obviously, because she was murdered, and her mom and sister, though, talk a lot about her and her best friend, about how wonderful she was and how they miss her. And I also read that she was her mom's miracle baby, which somehow made this more depressing, even though it shouldn't. But her mom thought she couldn't have kids, and so she had been being a mom to her older stepkids, and then, so they were basically her kids, too. And then she just randomly got pregnant with Alicia, and so her siblings were older than her, and they all just kind of doted on her. And it was just like this really sweet situation where, you know.
Yeah, that's really touching.
Yeah.
And really heartbreaking.
And just super sad.
Yeah, for sure.
And now it's like just gone. Because of some fucking loser psychopath.
Yeah.
Also, people, if you catch your partner texting teenagers, do not argue with the teenager. There's no reason for that. Like, definitely kick that person out and notify some people. Notify the teenager's parents of the pervert that's trying to prey upon them. If you think it makes sense, try to notify the local authorities, and so that the local authorities can check into this nonsense. Because at no point should 36-year-old men be preying upon 14-year-old children.
That's right.
Or other teenage children, but you know what I mean. Like, that's a no. Absolutely.
Absolutely not.
Yuck.
Yes.
He is holding on to be her dad. Not appropriate.
Not at all.
A whole child.
Mm-hmm.
Also, don't blame the children for these things. That's one of the things that gets me, especially having worked with teenagers and everything. teenagers are not able to make good decisions about texting older adult men and things like that, and like going out and drinking and crap like that. It's like at that developmental age, it's normal for people to want to go do dumb shit and jump off of shit and like do the things from the dumbass show. I don't watch that show, but that's his name, right? Dumbass. What is the name of that show?
I know the one you're talking about. Fuck. I can't remember. It might be Dumbass. But
is it Dumbass? I feel like I'm starting to doubt myself.
It doesn't feel quite no, right.
No, it doesn't.
But, like, it's
something... It's that Johnny Knoxville guy.
Yeah. Shit. I don't know. As soon as I stop thinking about it, it's going to come to
me. Y'all know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Now we can't stop thinking about that. Well... We have to go get some food. I've actually been feeling very sick, and Aaron has been working an unreasonable amount. And so we're going to go eat food and think about how much we love all of you. And we hope that you're having an amazing April. It is spring.
Jackass. That's the name. It's Jackass.
At first, I thought you were saying that April was a jackass or that I was a jackass. Okay.
No.
It's not dumbass. It's jackass.
Sorry. It came out of nowhere. I'm sorry for that. But...
I feel like dumbass is more descriptive of what people are when they're like jumping off of shit and lighting themselves on fire and being eaten by bees or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, like that's what teenagers think that is cool. And we need to stop holding teenagers to adult standards, except for sometimes when they do really terrible murders. And I will be a hypocrite about that. I'm totally prepared to be a hypocrite about like 14-year-olds that chop each other up. They can go to the jail.
I don't think that's hypocritical though.
Yeah. Well, it's not, that's not like a normal reckless behavior.
No.
Like.
Yeah, that's sociopathic behavior.
Trying to date an older guy or like going to a party and drinking alcohol when you're too young. Those are like normal teenager decisions that we just have to help them make better choices and be as safe as humanly possible. Cutting up your friends is not. So I don't.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I need to explain that to our listeners, but there's like a part of me that feels like I need to get up like a whiteboard and like write down like normal behavior, partying with friends, not normal, cutting up friends. Like those are two separate things.
Yep.
All right, y'all, we're getting off topic about weird stuff. So we're going to let you go. Oh my goodness. Though, before we go, we went on a road trip to see our family this weekend, and shout out to Therese and Ellen and Fu and the kiddos. And we saw some of those weird religious billboards. And there's this one stretch of, 45 that we were on, that had like exclusively weird churchy billboards, including one that promised to like save us from lust. But like right before that, they had like a really sexy Jesus for some reason. Like we don't understand that. Like why is he being depicted as being like a sex symbol? But, like, during the crucifixion, it was, like, really creepy. Anyway, we totally were reminded of the fact that we started talking about how we should have billboards that are, like, don't put bodies in suitcases. Do not cut up your friends. Because apparently some people need that.
Apparently so.
Yes. The Jesus one billboards are not working on those people. So maybe having a second billboard that's, like, don't buy plastic tubs to dispose of bodies.
Yeah.
Or like have a picture of a plastic tub with like teddy bears and trucks and toys in it and be like, check. And then have a plastic tub that has like blood on it and be like, no, don't do that. That's bad. Apparently that was a hard topic for some people. Okay, well, we're going to let you go for reals this time. We love you. Go to our Patreon, please, to support the show and get more episodes. There's like 3 years of content over there. There's so many bonus episodes. Oh, we're going to Comicpalooza again. So look forward to our big Comicpalooza announcement. If you're local to Houston, you can come watch us. I think we're doing a live show. We're not sure about that yet, but we're supposed to be doing a live show, maybe some panels. Plus we'll be like milling around, saying hi to everybody and being honest, purchasing items from other vendors because I love to do that. And also hopefully seeing you guys. We'll see you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.